Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Lee inbounds. Gobert steals it. Gobert out in front. Rudy to the rim. Rudy will rock you like a hurricane.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 27th of March. Jazz fall to the Clippers. Suddenly lost 4 of 5, and Rudy Gobert sounding off. What's happened to the club, and how concerned should you be? The Clippers give the Jazz a gift, and the Eastern Conference is nuts. We'll talk about it all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you are doing very well today. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. This is our daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. We give it to you each and every day. You can subscribe on iTunes or whatever your Android device is, and it will come to you each and every day, somewhere between 15 and 30 minutes of information about the NBA and the Utah Jazz via the eyes of a Jazz fan. Hope you're doing great. All right, let's get right to it today. I think I've laid out what we're going to discuss. I'm going to try to make a bigger-ish effort to just jump into shows a little more quickly. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Promo code is LOJAZZ, and you get a $20 rebate back on your first purchase sent to you. LOJAZZ. All right, let's get to pins across the world. Feel free to send me some. I haven't got any in a little while. DLock09@gmail.com. That's DLock09@gmail.com. And send me your story about how you became a Jazz fan, where it is you, where the origin of your Jazz fandom came from, and the rest. All right, let's go to, first off, this is from Brandon Park. I listen every day. Thank you very much. I love the analysis, stats, the passion. You make the day better. I grew up, me and my dad watching the Jazz. My dad is an all-state basketball player from long ago and true Jazz fan. I followed them while moving around in life from Australia to Las Vegas to Napa, California. So not only do I love the Jazz, but I love hearing the reference of the past, and I currently live in Bountiful, Utah. Please let Ron know I love hearing his commentary and insight. It's been great listening to him over the years. I also want to thank you for the tickets you gave me on December 26th. My daughter's from Las Vegas for visiting. We had a chance to have a fabulous night. That is Brandon Park, and that is our pin across the world. Thanks very much for tuning in. All right, so the Jazz lost to the Clippers in a game that they started slowly, and I think fits the reoccurring theme about this team right now, that I think all of us wish they were playing a little harder. It just doesn't, and that's a funny term, and I've never really liked it a lot, because I think a lot of times not playing hard enough is sometimes the shots just aren't going down. But they were on the wrong side of a 17-4 run to start the game. And while J.J. Redick, DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Luke and Bob Mute are one of the better teams in the NBA, starting fives in the NBA, one of the best five-man units. I would hope our five-man unit is better than getting beat on a 17-4 run. Now, we couldn't make a shot. We didn't hit a three until the first part of the second quarter. And so often it doesn't look like you're playing hard when the ball doesn't go through the hoop. You know, and flip it around, the Jazz going a 17-2 run in the third quarter that makes the game, you know, seems like the game gets the game a little bit closer. And frankly, the game is slipping away early in the third when their bench unit goes on an 8-0 run. The game was, you know, virtually tied heading into the fourth. So for all that bad start and everything else, it's not a great way to play. The Jazz went on an equal run in the third quarter. Game was tied in the fourth. And then Jamal Crawford led the way The next night he goes 2 of 12. But he leads the way, and their bench unit is able to carry the load the rest of the way. Jamal Crawford, Paul Pierce, Austin Rivers, Raymond Felton, Mo Spates. In Salt Lake, that same exact group fell apart. You know, and that's, we've always talked about the Clippers, that's the story on the Clippers, is if they get a good bench, then they're pretty good. But the night in Salt Lake, their bench went minus 12 without Chris Paul, and then they go on a plus 9 run that ends the game, then Hayward leaves with the injury, and that was pretty much that. And that's a long-term lingering issue, by the way. Like, if Gordon's hurt, none of these conversations we're having are relevant. I don't know if he'll have an MRI. I would assume he would have an MRI here at some point, and maybe last night, yesterday, he did. Maybe not. Maybe he doesn't have to have one, and that would be good. The x-rays were negative, though, and maybe it's not the knee, it's just the thigh, and then he doesn't have to have an MRI. But I don't know that if we see him tonight. But these next three, we've got to win. That's clear. The Jazz the Clippers gave him a gift again last night, and if the Jazz are going to hold to home court, which seems almost impossible when we left the Staples Center, now suddenly seems, well, maybe if the Clippers are going to lose games like they lost last night. If you didn't hear, the Clippers were up 18 with 5 minutes left and lost to the Sacramento Kings at home. It's stunning. And that puts the Jazz, at least for the time being, with a little bit more hope that maybe they can get there. But the Jazz no longer have the tiebreaker with anyone. So that when you look at the standings, you have to kind of look at everything as though the Jazz have to beat. The only scenario with the Jazz can't happen, I don't think, anymore, where the Jazz wouldn't actually have to win the tiebreakers if they tied with the Clippers in Memphis. But Memphis fell again last night. In a game they're supposed to, but Memphis suddenly lost three in a row. Maybe all games they were supposed to, but Memphis is back, you know, four in the loss column to tie us with nine to play. It's possible he collapsed like that, frankly, if Gordon doesn't play, but seven seems less likely. The Jazz are up a game in the loss column. Two games on the loss column, each the Clippers and the Thunder, but it's really only a game because they don't have the tiebreaker on either of them. So, in theory, if the Jazz go 8-1 the rest of the way, which I think is impossible, it's not impossible, it's just unlikely. New Orleans, Sacramento, Washington, then at the Spurs, home against Portland, home against Minnesota, at Portland, at Golden State, and San Antonio. So, there's a lot of losses left. I've originally had us winning 50 games out of this. That's somehow getting those six. That's probably getting all three this week. So Gordon's got to be healthy. We, as a team, have some collective shooting slumps and defensive slumps that aren't great. George Hill, well, first of all, in the last five games, the Jazz effective field goal percentage, which is that, you know, Wade's three-point shooting is 26th in the NBA. Our offense is 24th. Okay? It's not great. George Hill is 6 of his last 27 from 3, 22%. We go largely as George Hill goes. Right? Like, we can start. It doesn't mean that George Hill's the most important guy on the team. It means that when George Hill is good, he gives us an element that it just makes us different. In wins, he shoots 51% from the floor and 46% from three. And in losses, he shoots 40%, 11 percentage points less, and 22 percentage points less from three. So when George Hill is good, it brings a different element to who we are. Alec Burks is 2 of his last 13, 11 of his last 39 from three, and shooting 28% from three for extended period of time. Poor Alec, I think everyone had hoped that coming out of the All-Star break, that Alec would have some comfort in his body. He's played more games this year than he's played either of the last two, which is just great. And that he would have had some comfort to who he was as a player. The opposite has happened. He is struggling worse since the All-Star break. He's now got a career low from three. His above-the-break shot is not falling at all right now. And I wonder, I don't mean this, I seriously wonder whether or not, if we're healthy, he gets playoff minutes. And I almost wonder how soon until Quinn's going to go to that rotation. And I wonder whether Dante might play a little bit of that two spot and just give Dante a run there to see whether or not maybe that helps us out. The offense is, now a lot of this is because Rudy's not on the floor, so you have to dig, you have to dig a little deeper. But the offense with Alec Burks on the floor is 3 points per 100 possessions less good. And the defense is 4 points per 100 possessions less good when he's on the floor. Now, your other choice is, frankly, is to play Dante, and the offense is 6 points per 100 possessions less good when he's on the floor, and the defense is a point less good. So both of them really have struggled. Maybe Dante at the two relieves some of that burden. In fairness to all these numbers, we're so different when Rudy's on the floor versus off the floor that I actually think if you're going to, when you do this on any of these bench guys, Dante included, Alec included, that you almost have to go look at what their minutes are when Rudy's on the floor and when Rudy's not on the floor. And, you know, it's, and to some extent, the combination that's really been death is Dante and Alec together. And I think that that's a little bit of what Quinn has been trying to avoid here as of late. I haven't looked at that number recently. I can't imagine it's gotten, you know, I can't imagine we have a statistical number that's been getting better recently. But as and I'll look at it while we're speaking right now. But until recently, it was pretty torturous to have the two of them on the floor together. So you try to find combinations that work. Right now, that one's not working. I'm not sure that's, you know, I'm not sure this was the point of it. I'll actually have it updated here in a second. I have a computer program that does that. I just have to run the updates on it. It's been a little while since I've run it, so it'll take a moment. All right, here. Alec Burks and Dante Exum on the floor together. Actually, they've gotten better. They're minus 1.8 together. Here's the thing on Alec. He's minus 2.3 with Boris, minus 10 with Derek, minus 2 with Joe, minus 9 with Joe Johnson, minus 2 with Dante, plus 5 with Rudy, plus 4 with Gordon, minus 1 with George, minus 0.4 with Rodney, positive with Trey Lyles, and then that's it's actually been positive, really positive in 71 minutes with Howell Neto. The thought I have on Alec, I've always felt this way, is that we've miscast him. He's not a off-the-bench Vinny Johnson scorer. He actually is the fifth guy on the floor offensively who, when everybody else has made an advantage, he gets the ball and then he can go as well. But he's got to learn how to play that way. Similar to Dante, by the way, Dante's minus 0.15 with Favors, plus 5 with Gobert, plus 5 with Hayward, plus 5 with Hill, plus 2 with Rodney, minus 2 with Joe, plus 4 with Joe Johnson, minus 5 with Trey Lyles, minus, he's played a lot with Shelvin Mack, minus 16. Wow, we played 155 minutes this year with the two of them. And minus 9 with Withy. And there's and then with Boris, Dante's minus 5.3 as well. So I don't know what that tells you on all these things, but you know, really playing with Rudy and playing, I guess it's before you go look at those mass numbers, you just got, what I'm trying to say is you got to look at what they do with Rudy. Other guys that are slumping, Rodney Hood is 12 of his last 40 from the field, 3 of his last 14 from 3. You know, Rodney is been in double figures 2 of his last 8 games. Suddenly got George Hill and Rodney Hood both struggling. Yeah, your offense isn't going to be very good. I don't think these are particularly guarded shots, frankly. I could look back and see, but I think we're missing looks that you would expect us to make right now. Is it a fatigue issue? Is it a confidence issue? Is it a worn-out issue? Is it a... I don't have the answer in that. I really don't. I'm not trying to duck something. I just don't have the answer. Unguarded, The other night, we were 15 of 38 from the field. Rodney was 2 of 6. He was 2 of 7 on the others. Joe Johnson was 4 of 9. He hit some shots the other night. Gordon Hayward was 1 of 3. Gordon was pretty passive early in that game. Wasn't great. Gordon struggles against Luke Mbamute, Andre Robertson, Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler. The numbers are obvious. Joe Ingles, ever since guarding LeBron James for 35 minutes, is 3 of 6 from 3. Joe Johnson hit last night, but he came in at 27% from 3 since the All-Star break, and 4 of his last 23 above the break. And Boris Diaz, 8 of his last 24 from the field. I mean, those are poor numbers. It is either, and it is impacting who we are defensively. The Jazz defensive rating in 6 of the last 9 games has been over 111. 111 is where the Lakers are, which is worst in the NBA. So 6 of our last 9 games. Now, a few thoughts here. One is, on the big picture, we've only lost one game we should have won since March 2nd. Okay, we were favored to win in Chicago. Now, it's also turning out, as I've said, addition by subtraction is a big deal, and the Chicago Bulls are a tremendous amount better without Dwayne Wade. We still were favored. We should have won. But the Bulls are making a little playoff push here. They're half game behind Miami all of a sudden, and have a decent chance to make the playoffs. And if you look at what they've done prior since they've played us, they lost a close game to Toronto. They beat Detroit. They look like crap against Philadelphia, and they beat Milwaukee yesterday in a really impressive win. You know, so they're playing. They've won 3 of 5 recently. They're not the crap team that they were before Wade got hurt. They're much better. So we probably caught them at the wrong time. We were still favored. And we weren't favored to win in Houston. So this March schedule that we knew was going to be brutal. I mean, I mentioned this to everybody that on March 3rd, when we played back-to-back home games, we wouldn't play back-to-back home games again until April 4th and April 7th. You're playing 30 straight days of virtually road games, where we come home for a day, play, and leave the next day. Or we came home on a back-to-back and played. And we've only dropped one game we should have won, and we've won one game we should have lost. Now, we don't look good, but I'm not really convinced that anything... Well, we don't look good, okay? That's fair. I think some of the panic level is not focused to actually what the team has had to embark upon schedule-wise. And we knew it. We talked about it. We can talk about it a lot, and then you go through it. But, I mean, these games are tough when you just, you know, like, just kind of walk you through that. We leave on the – and I talked about it before, and I don't want to bore you with it, but, like, I think I've had dinner at home for 3 nights. And that's just a telling number, only because it just means you're either on the road or – you know, we played the 3rd at home. We traveled the 4th, played the 5th in Sacramento, played the 6th in New Orleans, played the 6th at home on a back-to-back, traveled the 7th. We're on the road, 8th and 11th, came home on the 12th, we were home for a night. Played the 13th, traveled the 14th. On the road, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. Home the 21st, just like home. No, I mean, came back from Indiana at 0-30, but home. Played the Knicks on the 22nd. We got a 23rd, was a day off. Traveled the 24th, played the 25th. We were home yesterday with a virtual, that was an easy trip to LA. So maybe it gets better here. Play New Orleans tonight, travel the next day. Play the 29th in Sacramento. Come home, get home at 0-30, have the 14th, play the 31st, travel Saturday, play Sunday, come home, have Monday off, play Tuesday, and then we're off at home for back-to-back days. Like, it's been, when everything is off like this, there's one of two things that's happened, that something collectively has completely fallen apart, or collectively as a group, you're exhausted. Now, there's a possibility that something collectively is totally falling apart because we don't look good. Right? I mean, you know, do you go start searching for him? Okay? We haven't been as good since Alec Burke started playing. Is that the right call? Nah, probably not. We haven't been as good since George Hill's extension didn't come through. Is that the right call? Nah, probably not. George Hill hasn't been as good since then, interestingly, though. Now, is that the foot? There's just so many different things it could be. It could be the foot. It could be that he's suddenly going to be a free agent for the first time in his career, and it's eating in his head like he's human, like that. Wow, I just turned down probably, I don't know the numbers, this is, I'm making this up, but, you know, I just turned down somewhere in the range of $80 million, and now I got to play and make sure I don't get hurt and make sure, like, yeah, I think that's got to wear at you a little bit. Since in the last 11 games, since March, he's not terrible, so I don't know if that he's not shooting quite as well, but it's probably more realistic to what he was than when he was red hot during the year, so that probably doesn't make sense. Derek's hurt. So the whole essence of us as a defensive team are, you know, what made this team great when you look at our two-man data points, and which I think, you know, has a little bit of noise to them, but I still think is interesting. And you go look at Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert, and it's a 96.3 defensively and in 532 minutes, and he makes you the elite two-man defensive group in the NBA, and maybe you weren't closing games with them, but they were playing probably 18 minutes a night of your 48 minutes a night together, and you don't have those anymore? Oh, that's a pretty big deal. You know, so now your big man combinations are Rudy Gobert and Joe Johnson, or Rudy Gobert and Boris Diaw, and Rudy Gobert and Boris Diaw defensively, so now are a 101.3. Maybe this all begins to come a lot of sense here. So Rudy Gobert and Boris Diaw are 103 to start, and then your next combination, instead of the 96.5, that's a pretty big difference, then your next combination is Rudy Gobert and Joe Johnson, and that's an 100. Okay, well, we were going to have those minutes anyway, but that's good. That's really good. And then we end up having to play a Boris Diaw, Jeff Withey combination at some point, and that's 111.5. Oh, that's terrible. And then we play a Boris Diaw, Joe Johnson for a little bit, and that's terrible at 110. And then we play a Boris Diaw, Trey Lyles a little bit, and that's terrible at 110. And then we play Boris Diaw, Jeff Withey, or what about Jeff Withey, Joe Johnson? Then we play Jeff Withey, Joe Johnson, and that's terrible at 111. Oh, so wait a sec. So in every minute that Favors used to be on the floor, we're now playing a defensive big man combination that's equal to the worst defense in the NBA. Okay. Well, maybe that explains it. We're all going through a murderous schedule. Oh. Maybe it all comes to make sense now. Might not be as insane, and we're not making shots. So then that gets to Rudy's comment. So I have two takes on Rudy's comment. Rudy, for you missed it, Rudy said that some guys aren't playing hard, they're just trying to score. So I have three takes on Rudy's comments. The first thing, the origins of Rudy's comments come from that every single time someone drives to the basket and scores on Rudy, he takes it personally. Both in a positive manner that he takes it personally and cares about defense, and maybe even in, just quite frankly, in a somewhat negative manner that he really cares about his rim protection numbers. Okay, right, he's trying to be defensive player of the year, and every time somebody's driving at him and they score, it makes him look bad. Like, I think that you've got to understand, and I'm not critical, that's just reality, that I think part of this game is, you know, where are the origins, where are the origins of comments, and he wants to win, and he wants to look good, and that's the same thing he's ever, and they're always based on that. So then, the second thing on Rudy's comments is, you know, I don't think they were great. Okay? Probably a little knuckleheady. Love the passion, love the energy, but probably little knuckleheady, probably not great for the team in all these ways. And so, yeah, you probably, oops. You know, there's probably a level of like, but on the other level, I would say, wow, maybe I haven't seen any leadership by anyone with the Utah Jazz in 10 years. in the locker room that was from George Hill. That's not fair. George Hill and Boris Diaw, I've seen some stuff this year. But we've been void of leadership from the players who need to be the leaders in 10 years. Right? Darren was not a leader. Gordon's not a leader. Boozer was closer to a leader than any of either of those. And I don't actually think being a leader is ripping your guys in the press. I think that's closer to the knuckleheady. But maybe we needed it. And maybe we needed someone. Maybe Rudy established that I got paid and I really care. And this is really important to me. And so I really, really, really care. And that's what the message he sent. And if he did, then that's great. Right? Then that's great. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the number one easiest way to buy tickets to any sort of event or show or theater or game or whatever you're going to go to. They have made what used to be, maybe you're young enough you don't remember, but there once was a time when buying tickets to an event was an incredibly cumbersome, difficult project. It was a pain in the you-know-what. There's no other way to say it. Now, what they have done, which is totally awesome, is on the SeatGeek app, which you can just go to your iTunes store or your Play store and download. The SeatGeek app is now there for you, and once you download it, you are able to get all of the ticket packages that are available to the upcoming game you want to see in one spot. They take every single person out there and give them to you and show you where they are, and show you where they are in the arena, what the prices are. And then the best part of what SeatGeek has added that makes it even better is that SeatGeek has added something called a ticket score. So every ticket gets a ticket score. That allows you to know what the best deals are for whichever ticket it is that you want to have, which I think is the coolest part about the whole app, because if you're into an arena and you're on the road and you're looking for a game that you don't really know, then you are able to know what to get. Finally, it's on your phone. It's secured. It's fabulous in that sense, and it's easy and convenient. So go to SeatGeek. Go download the SeatGeek app right now. If you think about it, might be going to a playoff game. And enter in the promo code LOJAZZ, and after you make your first purchase, you'll get a $20 rebate. So go to the store, get your SeatGeek app, whatever store, iTunes, Play Store. You don't go to like a real store. Don't go to Best Buy and say, can I have my SeatGeek app? And download, enter in the promo code LOJAZZ and under Settings tab, and then you'll be all set. All right, the Jazz gave the Clippers a 1-in-a-million gift last night. Or the Clippers gave the Jazz a 1-in-a-million gift last night. They were up by 18 with 5 minutes left and lost. It's nice. It makes you wonder about them. That's really what, you know, they're a funky group. That was an all-timer last night. It's happened like 6,464 times, and only one other team has ever lost. So that is really a fabulous, fabulous gift for the Jazz. Memphis lost again last night, and not in a game that you wouldn't expect them to lose. In fact, in a game you expected them to win. Excuse me, a game you expected them to lose. I mean, Memphis has these three games we talked about the whole time, but Memphis is suddenly down quite a bit in the loss column. Their schedule gets very easy. Memphis really may only lose one more game the rest of the way. Now, Marc Gasol did not play. Was that because he was playing the Warriors or because he's hurt? But Memphis is above a 55% win per chance in every single game but one the rest of the way. So make sure you don't doubt Memphis. I saw some people say there's no scenario in which there's a huge colossal collapse if the Jazz fall to 7. I still will tell you that 7 is in play if the Jazz aren't careful, and particularly if Hayward's hurt and out for a while. Because Memphis, as I just said, they don't play him. Now, the Clippers loss is a huge one because the Clippers loss was a game where they had an 80% certainty to winning. So I now project the Clippers. That's the only game we've had recently that changes my projections. The Clippers now, as of right now, if Gordon's healthy, I actually have the Clippers at 49 wins, the Jazz at 50, Oklahoma City at 50, and Memphis at 48. Yeah, so if we drop two this week because Gordon's hurt, then we're at 48 and we end up seventh. So I'll keep checking and updating that some more. But my latest kind of thought on this, I thought we would get to April 1st. I thought the Jazz, which is two more games away for everybody, April 1st is or three more games Saturday. It's three more games. The Jazz would be at 48 wins, Clippers at 47, Oklahoma City, Memphis at 43, and then the other two would make their surge as time goes on. We'll look some more at that tomorrow and the next day. All right, Jazz and the Pelicans. If DeMarcus Cousins doesn't play, the Pelicans are better. They're 3-0 in games when he doesn't play. They're 3-5 in games in which he does play, I think. Well, they're 8-8 since the trade, so that would mean that they're 5-8 in games in which he doesn't play. He does play. And they're 3-0 in games in which he doesn't play. He has a sprained ankle. We'll see if he goes, though. Frankly, without Derek Favors, it makes me nervous to have Boris Diaw guarding Anthony Davis. That is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.